Sportsnet 960 Mornings, brought to you by Universal Ford Lincoln. Visit Universal Ford during the Ford year-end pricing clear-out for great year-end offers on our most innovative lineup of vehicles like the Focus, Edge, and F-150. See myuniversal.ca for details.
With a story that could only be anybody's guess.
I'm in a great mood. We got George Strait going. Bo Levi hanging out. Game day for the Flames. The Hatchet coming up. Jason Lacanfora. We'll get some more football talk for you just after 9 o'clock.
We just did an hour 20 on football. We got to get back onto the Flames path here.
Big four-pointer tonight. The Minnesota Wild, 7 points back of the Flames. Will it be five or will it be nine? We'll find out. We get into it with Derek Wills.
Wills in the Morning is brought to you by Varsity Chrysler. Check out Varsity's all-out clear-out event on now or go to varsitychrysler.com and shop where Geo shops.
For the Minnesota Wild, we can, I guess, debate who this game is more important to, the Wild or the Flames. I guess it's the Wild, but if you're the Flames and you want to start getting that gap, that distance, breathing room, whatever you want to call it, I'm telling you, nine feels better than five, and that could potentially be the gap. Not to mention, if San Jose doesn't get a win tonight, what 2 points would mean for the Flames?
Yeah, it's funny. They were chasing that second wild card spot for so long, and now suddenly they're creeping up on some teams ahead of them in Pacific Division and on that first wild card spot currently held by the Jets. So, yeah, big proverbial four-pointer versus the Wild tonight. I think it is a bigger game for the visiting team, but a big one for the home team nonetheless.
Have you seen anything different with the Wild since they added Devin Dubnyk between the pipes? I mean, that's not necessarily a huge name given where he was at last year, but it seemed to have helped.
Oh, absolutely. They're 3-1-1 since they picked up Dubnyk, and he's just given them some stability in net, and they just couldn't get a save for most of the season. And Dubnyk's a guy who obviously did not have a great season last season. As a matter of fact, he had a terrible season last season, wound up finishing it in the American Hockey League with the Hamilton Bulldogs and didn't play very well there. Saw it firsthand. And this year, he certainly has been rejuvenated. And, you know, people forget that he is a former first-round draft pick, that he has been a starting goaltender in the National Hockey League, and he's big and he's athletic, and he's playing that way this season. And he was doing a really good job for the Coyotes, and they decided to move him on and get a third-round pick in return. And the Wild were desperate for a goaltender, and they've got a guy who's been helping them win hockey games. So, yeah, there's definitely been a difference with Dubnyk in town.
Yeah, and people forget this was a guy that the Oilers had pegged as their number one 16 months ago, and no one thought they were necessarily crazy at the time.
And they gave him a pretty big contract, Ryan, $3.75 million per season. So, yeah, they were pretty confident that he was going to be their guy moving forward. And unfortunately for Dubnyk and for the Oilers, maybe more so for the Oilers than Dubnyk, it didn't work out that way. But he certainly has helped the Wild.
Goaltending situations in Calgary, Hiller, obviously good game. He's getting the start tomorrow? Or tonight, pardon me?
Yeah, he will get the start tonight.
When will Rammel finally get another chance?
It's a great question, Rhett, and it's one that I've been asking myself and one that I've been asking some other members of the media. It's been well over 40 days since he last played a full game, because his last full game was December 11th in Buffalo versus the Sabres. And he's a guy who you'd love to turn into an asset, whether you move him before the deadline or decide to keep him and stick with your two veteran guys for the rest of the season if you're going to make a playoff push. But he's got to start to play some games at some point in time, you would think, unless they're just ready to go with Jonas Hiller and potentially leave Kari Rambo as the clear number two guy, or potentially bring up Joni Ordio and create a competition between Hiller and Ordio to be the number one guy. But I suspect at some point in time they're going to give Rambo a chance to start and to potentially take the ball and run with it, as Bob likes to say. But Hiller starts tonight. I wouldn't be shocked to see Rambo go in there against the Oilers two nights from now, but I think if Hiller wins tonight, they probably stick with him.
chatting with Derek Wills here tonight. It's the Wild and the Flames. We've enjoyed watching Marcus Granlund this season. His brother Michael was the more highly touted of the two. He is, again, first rounder. He's back in the lineup, and a little bit of a punch for them as they've now, I mean, you look over the last 11 games, it hasn't been great, but they are 2-1-1 in their last four.
Yeah, and they're a team that wasn't getting very much goaltending, and they're a team that could probably use a little bit more scoring punch, and Michael should give that to them. It's too bad we're not seeing a head-to-head battle between the brothers tonight, because I get the sense from Marcus that they don't have the greatest relationship, and we've read comments from Michael, something along the lines of he didn't think that Marcus was going to be an NHL player. So I think that that's something Marcus actually used as a motivation for himself. But, you know, it's a Wild team with some good players. Obviously, Zach Parise is a heck of a player. Thomas Vanek can score goals when he really wants to play. And on the back end, they've got some really good guys, including Ryan Suter. So it's a dangerous game for the Flames, but one that they really have to have. You've got to win the vast majority of games against the teams below you in the standings. And in the month of February, with so many tough matchups, they're going to have to win quite a few against teams above them in the standings if they're going to be there come the NHL trade deadline.
You look at this team, and Zach Parise, in spite of missing a few games, leads them with 19 goals. Then you've got Jason Zucker with 16 and Nito Niederreiter with 15. You would think we'd be talking more about Miku Koivu or, I mean,
Thomas Vanek
or Jason Pominville. It's really been a tough season for the big names, but a decent season for some of the youngsters.
Well, Vanek, I mean, he's been really streaky for a good chunk of his career. And I think that's why he decided to move on from him, and the Islanders did, and the Canadians did. And, you know, he can score goals. I think when he's on his game, he is an elite goal scorer. But he seems to really have trouble being on his game consistently. And he's getting a little bit older now, so maybe he's lost a half a step. But, you know, he is a guy who is certainly one you've got to keep an eye on. But, you know, they've got a team that has some good young players. I saw a lot of Zucker in the American Hockey League. He was a really gifted goal scorer there, and he's now kind of carried that over to the National Hockey League. So, like I said, a tough matchup for the Flames tonight. I think the Wild are probably a better team than their record would lead you to believe now that they've got a goaltender who they can seemingly count on. So for the Flames, I don't think it's going to be an easy game. I think they're going to have to be a lot better tonight than they were two nights ago when they got away with playing probably about a period and a half in that 4-1 victory over the Sabres. And I suspect that they will be better tonight.
Just a thought on Tyler Wotherspoon. A lot of people very excited to see him play. He had a very nice NHL debut late in the season, battled injury, and the reports have been getting better and better and better in the American League. Now he's up. When do we get to see this kid?
Well, I don't think it's going to be tonight, guys. Bob Hartley is clearly pretty happy with what he's seen from his third defense pairing of late, namely Rafa Diaz. And in the All-Star break, he had a revelation, a vision, I guess you could say, that he needed that second right-handed shot on his power play, and he's now got a right-handed shot in both power play units with Dennis Wiedemann on the first unit playing with Mark Giordano, and now with TJ Brody paired up with the right-handed Rafa Diaz in the second power play unit. So Rafa's a guy who I've been kind of tooting his horn for a little while now. I know he's not a guy who does things that wow you, but I think that he's a decent puck-moving defenseman who maybe deserves a little bit more credit than he's been getting. But now it looks like he's maybe getting his due. Bob Hartley had him on the ice late in that game against the Ducks last week where they were down a couple of goals and trying to get one to make it a little bit closer. And obviously he was out there in the power play and helped them get off the schneid on the power play. They were 0-for-17 with the man advantage going into that game against the Sabres. Officially, they were 1-for-4 in the PP, but for all intents and purposes, they scored right at the end of the other power play. They were 2-for-4 in the hockey game, and Rafa got an assist on one of those goals. So, you know, he's a guy who I think they like. As for Wotherspoon, he might have to wait for a guy to get injured or potentially for a matchup against the Oilers coming up on Saturday. But he's a guy who's going to have to be patient, and the fans who want to see him, they'll have to be patient as well.
Well, we appreciate it. We'll be ready for it tonight. It's a 7 o'clock start, 6 o'clock warm-up. Enjoy morning skate.
Actually, I'm going to look forward to the morning skate today. We know Curtis Glencross is not going to play. I'm anxious to see if they're going to make any changes to the lineup tonight. from the one we saw the other night in that 4-1 win over the Sabres. I think there's a chance that we see a change up front.
There you go. We'll keep our eye on Twitter, and then, of course, Hockey Central at noon with Steinberg.
Sounds good. Have a good day, guys.
Will's in the Morning is brought to you by Varsity Chrysler. Check out Varsity's all-out clear-out event on now, or go to varsitychrysler.com and shop where Geo shops.
A note worth bringing your way for tonight's game. It's the 29th of January.
That's correct.
They're playing the Minnesota Wild. Tonight, the Flames are welcoming Gary Roberts into the building. It's the first alumni night of 2015. Fans get a chance to meet their favorite Flames past. Of course, that's the alumni. That's what that is.
God, didn't he cross-check you in the head or something, right, Warner? You can't stand Roberts,
well,
right?
I was owning him down low in Carolina, and he suckered me right in the nose.
Yeah.
And then proceeded to want to fight, and my eyes are watering, and I'm...
Yeah.
Frankenstein arms, don't even know where I am.
I like this guy.
He's punching me out. Thanks, jerk.
And he, like you, is dedicated to post-career fitness.
Yes. I'll bet he sits on a football.
Tonight, Gary Roberts in the building. A little pregame puck drop, some features within the game, chance to meet and greet and get autographs. Now, Gary will be available for advance autograph from 5 to 5:30. That's exclusively for purchasers of the alumni game, the alumni night game pack. So a reason there for you to get those game packs. But tonight will be Gary Roberts night. What we got a pair of tickets.
Oh.
Should we give away a pair of tickets?
Sure, why not?
I don't want to make Jay answer the phone, so we'll do the fan feedback line.
960-960 on your cell phone?
What can we do? A little Gary Roberts trivia, perhaps?
Why not?
You've now given away your cross-checked you in the nose deal.
It wasn't a cross-check. It was
sucker punch.
Well, was it a suck? Really?
Yes.
That doesn't
Gary?
Seem... That does not seem like something that Gary Roberts would do.
Are they going to forever flame this guy? What's this? He's bringing him back down.
Oh, just settle down, all right? I don't know.
I'm confused here.
Just
don't know what they're doing with that.
Just relax. Where did he play his junior hockey?
Ooh.
If you can tell me where Gary Roberts played his junior hockey, he played for a couple of teams, but predominantly played the bulk of his junior hockey. Text through, we'll get your text number, and you will be a winner of a pair of tickets to go and see the Flames in the Wild and enjoy Gary Roberts Alumni Night. We got another pair, we'll give them away before 9 o'clock, but there you go. First chance at it, give us the answer, and we'll shoot you some tickets. We will come back with Eric Duhatchik next, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Morning Hockey Talk with Boomer, only on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Sportsnet 960 Mornings brought to you by Universal Ford Lincoln. Visit Universal Ford during the Ford year-end pricing clear-out for great year-end offers on our most innovative lineup of vehicles like the Focus, Edge, and F-150. See myuniversal.ca for details.
Fools are kind of blind. Thought everything was going all right. But I was running out of time.
Jason Lacanfora coming up, Super Bowl weekend upon us. We'll get into the details, Seahawks, Patriots. And we'll talk a little bit more about tonight's game, the Minnesota Wild in town to take on the Calgary Flames. It has not been the year that the Wild would have hoped for. You look at what they've done by way of trade, at the trade deadline specifically, and in free agency. Zach Parise, Matt Cook, Nino Niederreiter, Thomas Vanek, Jason Pominville, Ryan Suter, Charlie Coyle, all of these guys, none of them drafted by the Wild. And yet, strangely, they're not a lot better than they were when they had no one playing for them. Eric Duhatchik joins us. He's our NHL insider.
Sportsnet 960 Hockey Insider Eric Duhatchik is brought to you by Eastside Kia. Until February 2nd, get a 2015 Rio LX with half-price payments of just $21 weekly for 1 year. Eastside Kia, 23rd Street and Barlow, or eastsidekia.ca.
Before we get too far into it, want to congratulate Brian for winning our tickets. Gary Roberts, a member of the Ottawa 67s, is where he played. They'll be at Will Call for you, Aunt Brian.
Brian.
Is that his name?
Hey, Brian.
Hey, Brian.
Aunt Brian. All you need to do is pick him up. This, on paper, this would seem to be, Eric, it should be a much better Minnesota Wild team. But you go back to when Jacques Lemaire was the coach and they really didn't have many names at all. Certainly no Parise, no Ryan Suter. They had none of that. They were as good or better. What's your take on Minnesota?
Well, you know, you put me at the top of the list of the people that really thought that Minnesota was ready to break through this year, and I based that on the way they finished last year. I thought they were great in the playoffs. You know, they took out Colorado in the first round, and they looked like a team that could do some damage. And then, frankly, I thought that you know, Parise and Suter were, you know, two of the best free agent signings this side of Zdeno Chara. Really changed the culture of the team. I mean, Ryan Suter continues to play the most minutes of anybody in the league, and Parise is one of those guys that just, you know, for his size, he fights for every inch of ice, and he just, you know, he has an impact. And so I thought they were on the, you know, on the cusp of a breakthrough this year, and in a really tough division, you know, might give, you know, the Chicago's and the St. Louis's a run for it. So, I mean, you know, I look at their goaltending, which has been uncertain at different times. You know, Kemper's was great out of the gate and then hit a rough patch and then got hurt, and they basically had to, you know, go out again just as they did last year when they brought Ilya Brizgalov, then had to go out and get Devan Dubnyk to help them in the short term because it just doesn't look like Nicholas Backstrom is the same level of goaltender that he was. You know, you talk about the Jacques Lemaire era. Well, you know, part of that was that when, you know, Backstrom came, he was kind of like Mika Kiprusoff light. He was very, very good for them, and he just hasn't been the same player the last couple of years because of the injuries. So I don't know. You know, they should be better as far as I'm concerned. I like their team on paper. I think they've got 9 forwards that can play. You know, their defense is young and a bit in transition. But I think that if they solve the goaltending, then the rest of it will fall into place.
Can you sell this game for me a little more? Because it feels like Calgary, Minnesota on a Monday, right? Like, that used to be
The only thing is, like Minnesota, you know, last year, they were a pretty exciting, I don't know if exciting is the
easy,
right word.
Easy, Eric, easy.
But you keep waiting. But this was not Minnesota out of the expansion draft, you know, which was like watching paint dry. There's no doubt about it. I mean, you know, they were an efficient team. They were a well-coached team, but they didn't, you know, cross the center red line very often. Whereas Mikko Koivu is a good player. Pominville is a point per game guy. They have some players with offensive ability. I think the one sort of interesting guy this year that they thought would make more of an impact, and you know, I guess I did too, was Thomas Vanek. Now, you know, so when we last saw Thomas Vanek, he was going from Buffalo to the Islanders to Montreal in the midst of a really difficult season for a guy that was one of the premier goal scorers in the NHL. You know, then you hear that he had all these off-ice issues with gambling investigations, and, you know, maybe that explains it. But he was a guy kind of lingering on free agency, the kind of home run that he was supposed to hit, that guys of his caliber usually hit. The money wasn't there for him. You know, he took a 3-year deal from Minnesota, but the idea was that they would slot his salary into Danny Heatley's, and that looked like an upgrade because Heatley's game had deteriorated to the point where, you know, he's out of the National Hockey League right now. So you take a guy like Vanek, who should be, at minimum, a 60-point guy who scores 30 goals, and you put him in the lineup and you take out $7 million worth of underperforming Danny Heatley, and that should have been a net upgrade. And he has, you know, he's at times scored a little bit, but he hasn't really had an impact on that team. And that, to me, is the one thing that if they'd found a way of using that free agent money, you know, more efficiently, or if they were just simply getting a greater return from Vanek. That was supposed to be one more scorer in a lineup that had, you know, like Coyle coming, Niederreiter is a guy that had some hands and was a 5th overall draft choice. I go back to where I started. They should be better. They should be better, and you know, maybe they'll get their act together in the final third of the season. You know, it's a long way back in the Western Conference. That's the problem when you dig yourself a hole the way Minnesota has earlier this year.
They're 7 back. They've got 3 left against the Flames, all 3 of the season series, and it's a big proverbial 4-pointer tonight. Are you willing to write them off, or is there still hope for those looking for a long shot in the West?
Well, I'll put it this way. I mean, it's not just that the fact they have to catch Calgary, but, you know, they're behind Dallas, they're behind Colorado. So So they've got a long way to go. But they're for sure, you know, they're heartened by the fact that it's Calgary that they have to overhaul, and that Winnipeg is just in front of Calgary, and it's not Los Angeles. I mean, the Kings are sputtering along. You know, they have to catch them too, but it's, you know, it's not as if there's a team there that looks like, okay, you know, they're going to go onwards and upwards the rest of the way. I mean, you know, they would, from their perspective, they, you know, their management, probably the players don't think of it this way, but the management would look at it and say, okay, San Jose, they haven't got it figured out yet. Calgary, we don't know if the bottom's going to fall out of them. We don't know about Winnipeg. We don't know about Vancouver. I mean, all three of those teams are in playoff spots right now, and we're not supposed to be. So could one of them falter? Could all of them falter? Possibly they could. So I think if you're Minnesota, you're saying to yourself, absolutely, we need to put together a stretch of games here. We need to go on a streak because we have to take care of our own business. But somewhere along the line, you know, the bottom could fall out of one or any of those teams because, you know, they were not playoff teams last year, and we were better than them. So, yeah, you're right. I mean, this is a big game for Calgary, but it's critical for Minnesota. You know, the potential swing is, you know, as you say, you know, is it a 5-point gap? Is it a 9-point gap? I mean, that's a big difference. That's a big difference. If you know, we're talking tomorrow morning and they're five back and they're starting to feel good about themselves, you know, who knows? I mean, I still think they have a good enough team to get it together.
I know we talked about Mike Richards the other day. He was going on waivers. We expected he would clear. He did. Eric Francis, and I'm not looking for you to, you know, crap on another reporter's story or whatever. Do you believe there's, I mean, is this something they tried to get done? Because the story is the Flames are still are looking at what kind of a deal can be done for Mike Richards. Well, is this something that, in your opinion, maybe was done before the waiver situation took place? Or is there still somehow, some way, a deal that makes sense for Calgary?
Well, I don't know if there's a, put it this way, I've been able to confirm that there was a conversation and that there's nothing imminent right now. But the reality is that if you're a management team on both sides, you have to try. I mean, it's a hard thing to explain because we're all used to trades being something. You give me something that I want, I give you something that you want, right? That's how trades have traditionally worked in professional sport. So this isn't one of those trades. This is Los Angeles having a contract that they have to get off the books as, you know, as badly as they can get it off the books, because they got to sign Williams, they got to sign Stoll, they got to sign their two kids, and they've got Kopitar coming up in a year, and they've got an underperforming guy making too much money. So Calgary goes to them and says, okay, we've got, you know, tons of salary cap. We have said publicly, right? We have said publicly that we will be a banker to the National Hockey League, and so you come to us with your bad contract, and we'll talk, because, you know, we can find a way of working that salary into our structure, whereas you can't in yours. But you have to create an incentive for us. So what kind of an incentive can you create if you're Los Angeles for me, you know, the guy who runs the Calgary Flames, to take that contract off your hands? I would consider Tyler Toffoli. Okay, you can't have him. You can't have Tanner Pearson. Well, what about your first-round draft choice? And then LA has to sit there and think, okay, first-round draft choice. In a great draft, in a year where we could miss the playoffs, and if the worst scenario possibly happen, you know, the 12th overall pick becomes the first overall pick, and now we're trading Connor McDavid for the chance to bury Mike Richards' contract. Just too risky to do. So that's the kind of conversation that they are having. You know, if Los Angeles could create enough of incentive to Calgary for Calgary to take that contract, a deal would go forward. My understanding is that you know, Calgary wants something meaningful and tangible, and LA is saying, no, we just don't want to give up something meaningful and tangible, because we can bury that contract in the minors this year, and we can bury that contract in the minors next year if we have to, because then, you know, we get a little bit of salary cap relief, and, you know, it's the Wade Redden scenario all over, and it's too bad on the player. And basically, you know, LA is telling the player, go down there, rehab your career, show us that, you know, you still have something left. You're not old, but you need to be a little bit quicker than you are right now, and you need to be a little fitter than you are right now, and you need to be a bit more offensive, productive offensively than you are right now. And if you can do all those things, you know, when the season ends, if we're in the playoffs, we can call you back, and then we can talk in the summer and see where we're at. So that's the kind of scenario that was talked about, and as I say, I'm told that there's nothing imminent just because, you know, what Calgary wants, LA is not prepared to give up at this time.
So what happens if he goes down to the A and he's still not in good shape and he's still not putting up offensive numbers and he still looks like a guy that's 2 years past good right. NHL hockey player? Then what do they do?
Well, then they have two choices. You know, they buy out the contract. They just buy it out. It's not a compliance buyout, but in the summer, every team is entitled to buy out a player. Again, I'm told that they will do with him with what New York did with Wade Redden. I mean, Wade Redden was going to play forever in the AHL until the option of a compliance buyout came along, and that's what he did. But how many years did Redden play down there? Three in Hartford? Three? You know, they could potentially do that with Richards. And then, of course, you know, if Richards wants to retire, you know, then there's the issue of the cap recapture, but you know, the dollars are off the cap. So you know, they have some options, but I also think that they don't want to. You know, they know that they have these three or four options, and so you know, the pressure is on the player to work his way back to the National Hockey League, because if he can do that, the one thing about it is that you know that if he can become a viable NHL player again, then that contract isn't an albatross, because the money starts to go down, right? And any team that you know is in those mid-market teams like the Winnipegs and the Buffaloes that you know that actually don't mind carrying the salary cap charge, they're concerned about dollars in and dollars out, because Richards' contract, you know, I think it finishes at 3.5 for a couple of years before. It's not terrible for a viable NHL player, but he hasn't been that for a year and a half. Certainly not a viable NHL player at, you know, at 5.75 million. So there's pressure and the onus is on him to get it back. And if it doesn't, the scenario you're outlining, you know, he could be a member of the Manchester Monarchs for this year and whatever their new affiliate is going to be next year in that new AHL Southern California. Yeah. Thing that they've got, which is, I think is a pretty interesting story. I think they're going to announce that today, right?
Ontario. Yeah. And now he's not going to care because he'd be living in California.
Yeah, he won't care.
Back in LA. Well, it will make it a lot easier for sure. There was talk about him going to Ontario, which is where they're the ECHL team, and essentially they're flipping, right? So, you know, they will be in Ontario next year in the AHL, and, you know, and he'll be a phone call away. So, I, are you asking me what's going to happen? If 1 year from today, I think Mike Richards is a member of the Ontario team of the American Hockey League, and you know, he's earning his money, and he's living in California, and you know, the Kings are saying, well, we won two Stanley Cups with him, so we can live with that.
We are up against it, but I'm going to push it, because I want to know, in 1990, June of 1990, where is Eric Duhatchik? Literally and figuratively. You're working, are you a Calgary-based reporter at that point? Would you
talking about Trevor Kidd?
Would you have been covering the NHL draft 1990, the Calgary Flames with the 11th overall pick?
Trading up. Yep.
Yeah, take us through that, Eric.
Yeah, I can actually, because I've been thinking about it today. This is, you know, for everybody that's wondering why Boomer is being so obtuse, it's because the Calgary Flames were in a position to draft Martin Brodeur if they hadn't traded up from 20 to 11. But I have to tell you, I remember writing this as a coup for Cliff Fletcher, the general manager at the time, because Calgary was drafting at 20, and the top goaltender in the draft was Trevor Kidd of the Brandon Wheat Kings, I believe, and Hockey News thought that this guy was going to be a huge impact player, and I think Martin Brodeur was rated second or even third overall by NHL Central Scouting. So Cliff made the kind of deal that Cliff always used to make, which was to, you know, to be bold and brash and move up, and they basically got the goaltender of the future. And Trevor Kidd was going to come in, a Western Canadian guy with this unbelievable pedigree, and he was going to be the guy that was going to be their generational goaltender. And New Jersey was prepared to trade down to number 20, presumably, because they had an eye on a different goaltender. And yet, you know, when you do that, see, that's the great thing about this. You know, if you're the New Jersey Devils and you know that Martin Brodeur is going to be the winningest goaltender in the history of the National Hockey League, you cannot possibly make that trade, because you don't know if he's going to be there nine picks later. Somebody could take him 15th. Somebody could take him 18th. And all of a sudden, you know, he's gone and you know, you end up drafting somebody that might not play in the National Hockey League. So it was a tremendously lucky thing for the New Jersey Devils and a tremendously unlucky thing for Calgary, because if they hadn't made that trade, and if New Jersey had decided, okay, we want a goaltender, and if they drafted Trevor Kidd, and if Martin Brodeur was there at 20, And if Calgary had taken Martin Brodeur at 20, how would the face of hockey in this city have changed? It's an extraordinary thing to contemplate. And, you know, maybe you guys can contemplate it in the next segment. What if most of those 691 wins had been on behalf of the Calgary Flames? How many championships could they have potentially won?
Well, for the Flames, it's they could have had Marty Brodeur. And for the Leafs, Tom Curvers for Scott Niedermeyer, right? So things were going New Jersey's way, right?
New Jersey kind of had it going there, yeah.
Yeah, no question. Hey, Eric, thanks, man. Enjoy the Wild and Flames tonight.
I'll try.
Thanks, Eric.
Sportsnet 960 Hockey Insider Eric Duhatchik is brought to you by Eastside Kia. Until February 2nd, get a 2015 Rio LX with half-price payments of just $21 weekly for 1 year. Eastside Kia, 23rd Street and Barlow, or eastsidekia.ca.
Yeah, things were going good then for the Devils. You remember that? That was in the 91 draft. So in 1990, they have to settle for Martin Brodeur. The next year, the Leafs have their eyes set on Tom Curvers.
Oh, baby.
And the Devils are like, well, if you want him, we're probably going to need that first-round pick. Yeah, all right. They selected Scott Niedermeyer. Oof. Those two guys, Hall of Famers. No one's won more, basically, than Scott Niedermeyer, and not far behind is Martin Brodeur. We'll have the Brodeur retirement press conference coming up at about 9:30. If there's any Brodeur stories, I'm guessing he was just stymied you on just breakaway after breakaway. He was probably just your nemesis, right? Being the offensive.
I sniped on him.
Did you?
Broke about 100 game goals.
I was going to say, probably quite a schneid. 8:46, Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Sportsnet 960 mornings with Boomer in the Morning on Sportsnet 960, The Fan. Streaming live at sportsnet.ca/960. Sportsnet 960 Mornings brought to you by Universal Ford Lincoln. Visit Universal Ford during the Ford year-end pricing clear-out for great year-end offers on our most innovative lineup of vehicles like the Focus, Edge, and F-150. See myuniversal.ca for details.
And I won't ever take you back.
7 away from 9.
Girl, your memory.
When you're the New Jersey Devils, Martin Brodeur going to retire today.
Yeah, who cares?
Because I don't love you.
Picked, as we know, in the 20th spot in 1990. Played 1,266 games. The year prior, in the first round, they took Bill Guerin. He played 1,263 games. Not all of them with the Devils, of course, but still. And then in 91, they take Niedermeyer in the first round, third overall, 1,263 games.
Retired because he got bored.
And then Brian Rolston, 1,256 games. Four guys in three drafts that played more than 1,250 games each.
What's that, like 5,000 games?
Jeez. And I mean, others there as well. The one, the 1990 draft, Mike Dunham, Brad Bombardier, Yaroslav Modrý, Corey Schwab, Valerie Salopukhin, Todd Reardon.
All played.
All played. You know, David Harlock, whatever, still played 212 games.
It's probably better than a decade of draft for some teams in that 1 year.
It would be. Marty Brodeur, best of all time or second?
He played with Dom, too. He might put him third.
How do you differentiate when they're all that good, right?
Brodeur has the great longevity of the regular season numbers. Patrick Waugh probably has the edge with playoff success.
The hardware, right?
Not that Brodeur is necessarily lacking in that department either.
Okay, well, so and like you said, where does Hasek fall short as far as hardware is concerned? He's got Olympic gold, Stanley Cups. One Stanley Cup or two with Detroit? One for sure.
One, I think, yeah.
Hart trophies, which do Brodeur or Waugh have a heart?
Brodeur, again, it's the longevity. For Brodeur, he's got four Vezinas, five Jennings trophies, and a Calder.
Jennings, to me, okay, get rid of that one.
Systems, coaching, yeah. Team, yeah.
Has Stanley Cups, Olympic gold medal, all of that. Who are you looking up? I'll look up the
I got Dom here.
Go ahead.
What do you got?
Dom just crushed Vezinas. Like, and we talked about nominations for the Hart. Like, you don't see that very often with goalies. And
did he not win the Hart?
I think twice.
Yeah.
Which is crazy.
So that's what I'm saying is that you can't not put him in the conversation.
You have to.
How many games did Dom play?
Not nearly as many. Let me see, over his career, have to scan past all the awards. That's a full page. Can't find it. You know what? My site doesn't have game started.
Patrick Waugh has 3 Conn Smythe trophies, including 1 in his rookie season, 3 Vezinas.
2 hearts for Dom, by the way.
You know, you're really dealing with, I mean... 3 Conn Smythes. That's bananas.
That's bananas.
Yeah. And you look at Dom, like if you go put him on some of the teams that Marty and Patty had, like he would have more championships, yep. No question, because he was stuck in Buffalo, a low-budget team, for the bulk of his career.
Yeah. There's a question for you. Go through the list of players. Like you just named it. Niedermeyer, who did Dom play with?
Yeah.
For the that bulk.
Donald Audette.
Brian Holzinger.
Rob Ray.
Derek Plant.
So, I mean, you look at Patrick Waugh's lineup.
Yeah.
There's a difference.
It, to me, Ryan, reminds me a lot of the conversation about the best running back ever.
Flip a coin.
In the NFL. Because Emmitt Smith was the guy that did it forever and never really wowed you like he was the most explosive player in the history of the league. But there he is at the end of his career with the longevity, the most yards, all the touchdowns. Whereas guys like Peyton or, you know, maybe someone over a shorter span were more impactful over the short span, but they just couldn't do it for as long. And no one did it as long as Marty. Like, what was, we're talking, what, 19 to 42 in his age? It's incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's okay.
Good players, all of them. But I don't know. I guess I'll say Hasek because I played with him. But that's the only reason. And that Waugh's a jerk for beating us.
Waugh played just over 1,000 games. Was a third-round pick of Montreal.
Well, they didn't used to draft, remember? That was the thing forever. You don't draft a goalie in the first round.
Third-round. Anymore.
Goalies, I tell you, there's nothing harder to do than pick a goalie at the draft.
I'll tell you.
Seriously.
And is it not weird
Rick DiPietro went number 1 overall, and you got all kinds of undrafted guys winning Vezinas. It's the hardest thing to do.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, Woggett's credited with changing the position, right? Butterfly, all that stuff. And then you talk about the 2 other greats. Non-traditional.
Yeah.
These are not butterfly goaltenders, right?
So as far as regular season, what do we say? 1,266 for Brodeur, just over 1,000 for Waugh. Hasek, 735.
Yeah. So almost double.
Considerably less.
Yeah. Okay. And he still had all that hardware.
Yeah.
Is that but no longevity?
I don't know. Traded for Christian Ruutu. First drafted in round 10, then traded for Christian Ruutu, and then Hart trophies.
6 Vezinas for Hasek.
Yeah, exactly.
6 Vezinas.
DiPietro or Hasek? Well,
round 10. We don't even have a round 10 anymore.
Do round 10 anymore.
Well, you think about it. The Flames would know this well. Brent Cron and Leland Irving, both first rounders. The 7th rounder, Yoni Orto, is looking
Kidd.
Well, Trevor at least played a bit. The other guys, you know, did not contribute at the NHL level significantly. Yoni, I believe, is a 7th rounder. Orto.
Yoni now.
I'm just
saying. First name basis. Tom Barrasso was a 1st rounder that year.
He was all right.
He was a bit of a jerk, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was a real
jerk, right?
Yep.
So what's the Marty story then? You broke a drought against him.
Oh, I lit him up.
Where and when? What's happening?
In Jersey, his hometown.
You were playing for?
I can't remember. I think.
He always remembers this stuff.
I remember the goal. I remember the goal. It was about a 40-mile-an-hour wrister.
Muffin?
Really powered it in there.
A little change up.
He didn't think it was going to get there. He was like, hey, dumb defenseman, why didn't you just grab that?
Oh, yeah, I scored a goal on him. Went to dump it in. It went off a stanchion, and he went out to stop the rim and went right in the net. Great goal. Tomorrow you won't be here. We will review the game from tonight. But when we come back, Jason Lock and Ford will talk Super Bowl. And then, yes, Martin Brodeur, one of the greatest ever. He is calling it quits. I'm curious, because he's going to work for the Blues.
That's weird, isn't it?
It is odd. Even when they showed his picture up there.
With the blue mask. Yeah. And what's the deal? He and Lou ended on bad terms?
Oh, I think so. I think so.
Give me one more year.
I think, well, remember they went to the finals? And if he hadn't gone to the finals a couple years ago,
yeah.
Lou was trying to run him out of town, telling him, okay, buddy, out of the way. We got to move on. And Marty didn't want to give it up.
Because I was looking here. Last night, the Devils beat the Leafs by a score of 2-1. It was the 42nd straight start for Corey Schneider.
In a row?
Can you believe that?
Yeah. Wow. Clemenson and Keith Kincaid can hardly play. Remember when they played the Devils earlier in the year?
So if with Lou, if that's the way he likes to run, you can understand why he wouldn't want Marty around when he's traded for Schneider and wants one guy to do it all. I don't know. But to hear that he's going to now join the front office of the St. Louis Blues, clearly some kind of a disconnect there. 901 coming back. Sports at 960 The Fan.